Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. Klaus Regling, the managing director of the European Stability Mechanism, recently gave an exclusive interview to Kathimerini, where he discussed the economic prospects for Greece and Europe in 2022. Regling touched on the strength of the recovery of the Greek economy in 2021 and the road ahead, citing the importance of Greece's recovery and resilience plan as a tool to place Greece on a higher growth trajectory. He also addressed concerns over Greece's debt, which now exceeds 200% of GDP, making it clear that the ESM believes Greek debt is manageable over the coming years. Yannis Paleologos, Kathimerini's Brussels correspondent, joins The Greek Current to discuss the key takeaways from his interview with Klaus Regling. Yanni, it's great to have you back on The Greek Current.
Great to be back, Thano, and happy New Year.
Yanni, after the hit it took during the pandemic, the Greek economy looks like it's bouncing back, and the European Commission sees Greece's economic recovery continuing into 2022. What's the ESM's and Klaus Regling's outlook on Greece's economic trajectory?
It's, I would say, quite a positive outlook. There is a sense that things were going very much in the right direction before the pandemic hit. Obviously, the pandemic led to a major hit, a 9% drop in GDP in 2020. But there was a strong recovery in 2021. It's expected to continue in 2022. You know, Mr. Regling is satisfied by the way in which the government plans to return to primary surpluses after the spending splurge to combat the worst effects of the pandemic over the last couple of years. And also, you know, factors like tourism did better than expected in 2021, and that's expected to continue in 2022. So, you know, barring unforeseen disasters, it's quite a positive outlook.
The ESM is the largest creditor in Greece, and Greece's debt, as a result of the pandemic as well, now exceeds 200% of GDP. Is the ESM concerned about the overall debt Greece has and whether it's manageable in the long run?
I mean, there is some concern. In our interview, Mr. Regling called it a vulnerable point given the size of debt relative to GDP. But, of course, in the years of the Greek crisis, there was a reassessment of how to measure the sustainability of debt. You know, the debt level relative to GDP remains an important factor, but it's also very important how much it costs annually to service that debt. And of course, given the fact that now the ESM owns more than 50% of Greek debt, and because of its AAA rating, it has offered really favorable terms in terms of repayment, that means that Greece pays a lot of money every year in debt servicing, and that means that despite the very high debt level relative to GDP, the view of the ESM is that this is a manageable level of debt.
Were there any other points of concern when we look at the Greek economy that came up during your interview with Klaus Regling?
Well, I mean, one concern, which is the same for all European economies, is how the pandemic will evolve in 2022. Of course, given Greece's level of dependency on tourism as an economy, you know, it's perhaps more vulnerable than others to another downturn caused by the pandemic and reduction in travel and all that. There's not that much that Greece can do about that. Another issue which I brought up was the support from the ECB's monetary policy. You know, since we had the interview, there were the positive developments that we all heard about continued ECB support despite the end of PEPP. But he insisted that the most important thing in terms of Greece retaining the support of the markets and keeping its borrowing rates low is that it continue with its sound fiscal policy and its structural reforms. And so long as it does that, that's much more important in his view than anything the ECB might do.
Sticking on the ECB's monetary policy, it's obviously been a big help to European countries, including Greece, during the pandemic. Yes. Regling, however, he warned that this emergency support will change at some point as the economy returns to normal. And governments obviously need to be prepared. Given its fiscal planning, is Greece prepared for this? Or do you think that this extraordinary spending that we've seen to combat the pandemic is something that will be hard for politicians to move away from?
So on the one hand, given the arrangement that was reached, there will be ECB support for Greece going beyond what was foreseen in the context of PEPP. So that's a positive development that happened after Mr. Regling and I spoke. In terms of the fiscal policy and the economic policy more generally of the Greek government, he declared himself relatively optimistic that, you know, the lessons of the Greek crisis have been learned, that there won't be a kind of a regression towards overspending and clientelist policies. And of course, he put a great emphasis on how well the country implements its recovery and resilience plan. He said it's a very good plan. It was, of course, widely praised in Brussels as well. But he said it's extremely important that it's implemented well. It's an unprecedented amount of European money that has to be absorbed by the economy. So, you know, it will take a considerable amount of effort between now and 2026 for that money to go where it should and to have the expected positive impetus for the Greek economy.
Yanni, you chronicled a lot of the Greek crisis as it was happening. Do you share that view that the lessons of the crisis have been learned here?
I think that's a very big question. There certainly is a level of planning and control of spending that certainly was non-existent before 2009. And I don't think that kind of structure can be gotten rid of again. I mean, everyone understands that the approach to fiscal policy that was prevalent before 2009 led not only to a disastrous outcome for the Greek economy and the Greek people, but also a tremendous humiliation and loss of fiscal sovereignty. So no one wants to go back to that. And of course, you know, there are still structures in place to oversee the Greek economy and its handling and to make sure that there isn't that kind of a relapse. So I would say that, you know, to a significant extent, the lessons have been learned. And to the extent where there are temptations, you know, to go back to the old ways, there are a number of ways in which that can be prevented.
Bringing us back to your interview with Klaus Regling, you touched on inflation and the increase in prices, mm-hmm. particularly energy yes. prices. Over the last week, mm-hmm. we've seen Greece announce a new round of relief measures to help households and businesses manage these price hikes. How has this debate mm-hmm. on energy, which also has a geopolitical angle, been unfolding on the European level? And have there been any additional steps announced?
So it's a very complicated and occasionally tense debate. There is the issue of the influence of natural gas prices on energy and on the amount households and businesses have to pay for electricity, which is obviously a very politically hot topic. There's the issue of Europe's dependency on Russia for natural gas, which makes it much harder for Europe to push Russia on the current crisis with the Ukraine. More than 40% of gas imports in Europe come from Russia. And there's also the question of, you know, the association of energy and the climate goals of the EU. Can they be achieved without natural gas as a transitional fuel? Can they be achieved without nuclear? Very, very contentious issues. I would say that, you know, in terms of the ability of the EU in the short term to affect this issue, especially the issue of the prices, it's quite limited. It's only been able to, through the toolkit it published back in October, to give some clarity to member states, to the governments about what they can do to help cushion the blow for consumers and businesses. There's also been some talk about some more far-reaching measures like, you know, joint procurement or common storage of natural gas. But that's something that can only take effect over the medium term and cannot really be effective in combating the current consequences of the high prices.
Yanni, during your interview, you brought up the issue of a new stability and growth pact that's going to be negotiated in 2022. Can you give our listeners mm-hmm. some insight into, you know, what the Stability and Growth Pact is and why this is going to be significant in this new year?
So the Stability and Growth Pact, or SGP, is the common fiscal framework under which all EU governments are meant to operate. The reason for its existence is that with the monetary union, monetary policy was centralized in the Eurozone. It went under the control of the European Central Bank. But fiscal policy has remained the purview of national governments. But it was understood that in order for monetary policy to be able to work, there needed to be some coordination of fiscal policy and some limits in terms of budget deficits, debt levels, to make sure that different governments were more or less fiscally on the same page. In terms of its implementation, Mr. Regling considers it to have been quite effective, but there were obviously a number of problems with it. Countries in the north would argue that it's become too complicated and too easy to give exemptions to certain countries, especially bigger countries. Famously, the former president of the Commission, Mr. Juncker, said that France is France and therefore we cannot impose the rules of the SGP on France. Other countries like Greece and Italy suffered inordinately by the need to achieve fiscal targets in times of recession. You know, in times of recession, reaching the fiscal targets becomes harder. You're forced to raise taxes and cut spending, and that makes the recession worse. Greece, Italy, and I should mention the other countries like Greece, which were under a bailout program. So now there is a consensus both in the north and the south that the SGP needs to be reformed, but we are quite far from a consensus about how it needs to be reformed. There is some hope in the fact that everyone agrees that public money needs to be available to achieve the very ambitious targets of the green and digital transitions, and also that given the level of debt that has been reached because of the pandemic, the old rules in terms of debt reduction cannot really be applied as they are right now. But getting from there to an actual specific reform and overhaul of the pact is going to be quite complicated.
Yanni, other than the issues that we've discussed now, what are going to be the other key priorities on the economic horizon for the European Union?
So one issue that is going to be a high priority for the French presidency of the European Council, which is going to last until the end of June, is the so-called carbon border adjustment mechanism. It's a proposal by the European Commission to impose levies on competitors of European industry from third countries that have a more lax environmental policy, so as to not put those industries in Europe at a competitive disadvantage. Another key priority will be the adoption of a proposal which was made by the Commission a few weeks ago on sort of implementing the global agreement on minimum business taxation. This is an agreement reached by more than 130 countries last October. It has two pillars. One is about stopping profit shifting by companies to low tax jurisdictions. And the second part is about a minimum 15% tax rate on business profits. And this is another complicated discussion, given that some European countries have, as a central part of their economic policy, low tax measures which attract multinational companies to their shores. And this will be something that will be discussed in the early part of the new year. And a final thing, which is very important and also a high priority for the French, is the finalization of the two European acts on the regulation of big tech, the Digital Services Act, which is about regulating content, and the Digital Markets Act, which is about regulating monopoly power and preventing the big tech companies, most of them American, from abusing the power.
Yanni, thanks for joining us again on The Greek Current. Great speaking with you.
Thank you so much.
In other news, Greece's health authorities on Tuesday approved giving an additional fourth jab of coronavirus vaccine to people with compromised immune systems. The National Vaccination Committee decided that this group should be able to get the fourth dose between 3 and 6 months after the third, with administration expected to begin soon. Marios Themistocleos, General Secretary at the Ministry of Health, told Local TV that there had been no discussion so far on expanding the fourth dose to the rest of the population, adding that he hoped this wouldn't be needed. Greece has already made vaccination mandatory for everyone older than 60, and those who fail to book an appointment by January 16th will face a monthly fine of 100 euros. Finally, Ioannis Kasoulidis was sworn in as Foreign Minister of Cyprus on Tuesday, returning to active service 4 years after deciding to leave public office. He takes over from Nikos Christodoulidis, who resigned on Friday. During his swearing-in ceremony, President Nikos Anastasiadis praised Kasoulidis' track record, pointing out that Kasoulidis had held the post in the past with absolute success and professionalism, taking well-thought and targeted decisions at times of crisis, always bearing in mind the best interests of the country. At the same time, Anastasiadis expressed regret that he was losing the services of one of his closest associates, as he thanked Christodoulidis for his close cooperation, dedication, and effectiveness. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.